Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Carrington.
How are you?
I'm good. You have walked into a hotbed of deceit and trickery.
Have I? That happens a lot with me.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
We played Suspect.
We did play Suspect, which surprisingly is an Infocom game in a twist for us.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is a mystery game, and it, mm-hmm. it is a game that we played. It was released November 1984 in the category of mystery. It is credited to Dave Libling, who, let's see, did the last game that we played, The Spellbreaker. We're in a Libling motif right now.
Okay.
And he did Enchanter and Starcross and Suspect and Shogun and Lurking Horror and this thing that we played as well, Suspect.
Okay, so he's done a bunch that we've done and a couple that we haven't done yet, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But he didn't do the other Infocom's other major mystery games.
Oh, so just Suspect or just Enchanter?
I mean, he didn't do...
The mystery games.
Games, right. He didn't do The Witness and he didn't do the...
Deadline.
Yeah. Right, Deadline.
Is that why Suspect came out in a combined edition later on, like the next year or 2 years later, called the Classic Mystery Library,
right,
which included Suspect, The Witness, and Moon Mist instead of Deadline. So
that's weird.
Maybe he didn't give, like they didn't have the rights to re-release his stuff or something? It seems odd that it was include Moon Mist instead of this.
You're right. Are you telling me we have another mystery to deal with?
Yes, we do. No, we already played Moon Mist. I liked it. You
did
didn't.
We have.
I liked it. You didn't.
It's so forgettable. That was the one in the house, right?
Yes. They're all in the house. Yes. Moon Mist was one where you show up and there's a party going on.
Right.
Unlike this one where you show up and there's a party going on. And then in Moon Mist, there's a mystery. Unlike this one.
There's a party going on right here.
Raise the roof, Kevin.
All right. So. So this is yet another mystery. This is like, they basically had three big mysteries. This was the third and final one. It was released in November 1984, and then thankfully they stopped.
Okay, spoiler. So this is 1984, then this is kind of the end of peak doing amazingly well Infocom.
They did amazing in 84, and that was the year they released Hitchhikers and some other good stuff. And I think they this was the last one for the year, because it was November of that year, and so maybe they didn't go out on a high note.
It was their Christmas game.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I see it. Sorceress, Sea Stalker, Cutthroats, Hitchhiker's Guide, and Suspect. That's a lot of games to put out in 1 year.
Yeah.
Because 2 years later, they're owned by Activision, and then the goal is to put out, I think, 7 a year or something, but they basically crumbled.
24 a year, 2 a month or something at that point.
Just weekly. Stream them live to people as wanted. Okay, so 1984, if I remember from a really good, there was a really good presentation I saw you give at Kansas Fest. I was there giving it too. And we talked about in 1984 was the year that Infocom declined an offer from Simon & Schuster to buy them for something like 25 or 30 million, which was, all I remember is it was twice as much as like their own internal evaluation. Like Infocom thought they were worth 50 million, and Simon Schuster says, I'm like, okay, we'll give you 30. And they're like, nope, we can do so much better. And they didn't.
Nope.
Infocom. Not that they should have sold, but it was one of those things where they thought they were going to, it'll be up.
Right.
But it wasn't.
It was not. Yeah.
We have jumped ahead. Are we doing feedback?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, see, I see that, but I don't know if I kept any more.
I did. Yeah, okay, we're all over the place today.
People send us email.
We do.
Letters. Like I didn't put any of the emails
in my notes. Send stacks of letters. Letters.
Do you get stacks email by the stack? I guess, in a sense.
Yes.
Digitally, but...
Right, digital stacks. Okay, read a letter. I have several here.
I have none.
You have none. All right.
No.
Our friend...
stupid feedback, but then it fell on you.
Our friend John Acock wrote in, said, hi guys, I love the podcast. Today I finished listening to the Spellbreaker episode and also learned through unrelated random Googling that there's a phenomenon known as a Carrington event. Mm-hmm. And he linked to that in the Wikipedia. He says, I can't unknow this. And every time I hear Carrington on a podcast, now I'm going to think to myself, oh, it's a Carrington event.
Yes, there was a big one in 1859, I think, was the
Carrington
event.
What is a Carrington event?
It was a solar storm. When the sun gets just massive and bright and painful to look at, they call it a Carrington. it's like a solar storm, a geomagnetic storm.
Nice.
Like a really big one, a mass ejection.
Well, now.
I'm really happy it's the thing that's named after me. Well, not named after me, but, you know, named after me in advance.
Are you named after it?
No. I'm not named after Dallas. My dad was like the fifth or sixth George in a row. Hated his name his whole life. Sorry for Georges who might be listening. He wanted to change the tradition. He said, well, if you're going to change a family tradition like that long, then I got to make it a big name. And he heard Carrington as a last name when he lived in England. And he said, oh, that'll be a great first name for a kid. If I have a boy, I'll name him Carrington.
Cool.
And I became a Carrington.
Nice.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's good, except you don't, what I often tell people is it's 10 letters long and a lot of forms only have 9 spaces. So I get a lot of mail addressed to Carrington. So think about that, kids. Actually, if you're going to name a kid nowadays, I think you look whether the domain name's available. That's the main reason.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thing I would pick, like, if you can't get the .com, then
yeah,
pick a different name.
That's why my kid is named Quaxleyfud.
Oh, darn, you beat me.
Dot. EU.org.
EU. Nice. I'm Carrington.gov. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so that's some feedback I like at Carrington. Did anybody... I think people wrote us about Infocom games, right?
They did.
What else you got?
Let's see. Torbjorn Anderson. Sorry.
Kjorben. Yeah, he's written in before.
Yes. I'm sure I destroyed his name just as badly then. I just listened to your Spellbreaker episode. Happy to see that you're back. Although I'm surprised that you pick Suspect for your next game, because if you ask me, that's a pretty difficult one as well. I found it harder than Deadline. I wouldn't be surprised if you've gotten a few pointers about this already, but apparently there was a BBC series called Micro Live that I know absolutely nothing about. They did a bit about Spellbreaker that was broadcast shortly before the game was released, and someone put that bit on YouTube. He put a link, which I will put in the show notes. And he said about the label on the rug that I asked about, he said, I think that's in every version of the game, but you have to look under the rug to find it, which is not what I did. So,
no.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to word it just right to get what you want. He said, don't try that while you're flying on it, though, unless you're curious.
Okay.
And then he talked about something that is kind of spoilery, so I'm going to skip that. And yeah, that's a lot of spoiler stuff. So thank you for writing, sir, whose name I will not try to pronounce again. Florian Weps wrote in, and he said, hello, sailors. I see what you did there, Florian. Thank you for doing this podcast project. Having stumbled across it, I am binge listening to past episodes over the holidays, including episodes, at least those games I've not played yet. After listening to your experience with Starcross, I want to share mine. Starcross was the space game that we played a million years ago, right?
Yes, and I was a Starcross lover, yes, but you were not.
No, I was not.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I see. In 92, while my first year at the University of Zurich studying physics, I spent a considerable amount of time on this game. I had a pirated copy of it, but without any manuals or the table of masses and associated phi, theta, r coordinates, which is something that you was a pack-in for the game that you needed in order to get into the game, really. You have to put some numbers into your spaceship computer that you get from this chart that came with the game. So that was basically their copy protection. He said, in order to play it, I disassembled the Atari Z Machine interpreter that came along with it, then reassembled it with a switch to trace the comparison opcodes in the hope of discovering the values of the coordinates the game tested against.
I like it.
That worked, and I proceeded to play the game, and yes, it was hard and frustrating, but I finished it out of sheer spite After going through all the trouble having reverse engineering the code, if I remember correctly, I even discovered a bug in the M68K disassembler in the process. I did not use any clues because I did not have any. I did not have access to any, but I cheated by creating a vocabulary extracting program using the knowledge I had gained of the Z machine. When I was stuck on the puzzles and suspected I was not using the correct word, not that this helped, I still had to test through all the verbs I extracted. You can tell the limits of my social life in those days. This was before I had any internet access. We lowly students only got it in 1993, I think. Years later, I found the Infocom retro gaming community on the net and discovered that other people had reverse engineered the Z machine. I also bought the Activision CD at that point to ease my conscience. Happy holidays and looking forward to more episodes. That was Florian's nice. Story.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see if I have one more for you.
One more.
This one is very long and it's probably interesting, but I think we'll save it for next time and I might call that down to the good bits. Okay, so we've read some mail.
Excellent. Well done. Well read.
Thank you. Do what I can.
Did you learn any words while reading those?
No, I learned one word while reading. The only one word I learned from Suspect was actually in the browsy.
Oh, what was that?
The word was gimcrack.
As in Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care?
No, maybe. Maybe.
Okay, what?
Gimcrack means flimsy or poorly made, but deceptively attractive.
Oh, I feel that. I feel seen.
It's my life, man.
I don't remember that. I don't think I know that word, and I don't think I learned it. I did read the browsy. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, browsy. So let's talk about Suspect.
Let's do it.
All right. The front of the box.
Oh, are we going to talk about the elephant in the room?
Says Suspect, and there is an art of people dressed in various costumes. It is easily the worst art of any Infocom cover.
That's the elephant. They gave the elephant a brush and they asked them to, and I think for an elephant, it's pretty good. It's terrible. It's shockingly bad. It's by a famous artist, I guess, but I always thought it was a kid that at like one of the children at Infocom was asked to do a spec thing and then they accidentally printed it. Mm-hmm. It's shockingly terrible looking.
Yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, I may not know art, but I know what I don't
it's
like.
It's real bad. It's by a famous commercial artist named Alan E. Kober. Apparently, they spent a lot of money for it. He also did the art for some of the browsies.
Is that where you get the phrase, a load of Koblers?
Yes, absolutely. I looked that up just now.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then it's this terrible art of people in costume, and there's like some writing on it. I can't even read. You're not sure who, but one thing I... it was certain someone is dead and now they're pointing fingers at you. And that is written like in cursive and it looks like it was written by a 4-year-old.
It's terrible. It's a whole bunch of people in costume, which is the setting of the game here. You're at a Halloween party and everyone's in costume. But it's like, have you ever had a friend who can, like, I can't draw and I'm not great at music, but I can still appreciate music. And so this, I think the problem with the art is it falls into like the uncanny valley. It's stylized, but not so stylized that it feels like an impressionist thing. It feels like somebody who tries to draw accurately, but can't quite pull it off, which is like that worst position to be in. Everything's just a little not accurate. Oh, it's just terrible. I think it's a very bad cover.
Someone on Twitter, and I'll try to find the link, but no promises, sent me a link of an early version of the cover that was printed in an Infocom catalog before the game was released. Mm-hmm. It was a version they were considering or a spec version or something. And it's not great, but it's better than this. So
it's hard to not be.
Yeah. The back of the box says, "You're guilty until proven innocent. You have walked into a hotbed of deceit and trickery. And now they're accusing you of something you couldn't have done, but they have proof that you did it. You're a killer, they say." Who wrote this copy? This is terrible. It's just like, oh, we're on deadline.
I don't find that bad. But
it's not good. And then, until you can prove them wrong, your guilty is charged murder. Among society's upper crust, murder is a kind of nastiness that must be cleaned up quickly. So isn't it convenient that you, a struggling journalist looking for a good time and a good story, end up as the scapegoat? The evidence is stacked against you, and you're being forced to prove your own innocence and someone else's guilt. But no one wants to help you. You're an outsider, and only an outsider could be so rude as to accept an invitation to the social event of the season, then spoil it all.
Oh,
man.
It's such an outsider.
Yeah.
So what was the rating for this game? I think like the last one we played was an expert game. What does it say? Advanced level. Okay. So on the cover, advanced.
Okay.
So it definitely was easier than other games we've played, I thought. So, but it's not like most of the mysteries. I think there's a way you can tackle them. And if you don't do that, you could just flail around and have a lot of difficulty with it. Unlike the rest of the games where you can just kind of go from place to place and try to figure out things at your own pace. Right. Here you have to keep moving. The clock is ticking. And
they could have called this game easy, intermediate, advanced, or expert. It doesn't matter because it's not fair. It's not fair. And then so
there's a couple of small things. Yeah,
and well, once there's one, then there's two. Well, once there's two, it doesn't matter. The game's not fair at that point, and it doesn't. I lose respect for it and don't care what they say that the rating is because I'm angry at it at that point.
Oh, I look forward to the post-spoiler fence rants from Kevin. Oh, stay tuned. Okay, but we should talk about so this comes with a browsy, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Funny. Which is Murder and Modern Manners. Written, like, you can read it as if you're, it's a practical guide to murder manners.
Right.
And, written as if you're going to really, it's really going to do a murder, and it's,
right. It's written in the style of good. Like a Miss Manners or an Emily Post, yeah. Is that her name? Yeah.
But when it comes to murder, and so I dug it. I thought it was pretty funny, browsy.
Yes.
It's no Jim Crack.
And then that was the kind of the major thing. And then there's an invitation to the ball, and then a note from your editor and a business card.
And a receipt. You show up in costume. Everyone in the game at this party is in a costume, and you show up dressed as a cowboy. So you get a receipt from, it's like from a rental place, I guess, for where you got your costume rental. Yeah. Yeah. So you get that. Yeah. And there's also a newspaper page talking about it's like a page from, what is it? A page from the Maryland Countyside Magazine about developers who are interfering with the Hunt Club upper class society, and it's written in the style of the, you know, There Goes the Neighborhood, but it's literally titled There Goes the Neighborhood. So it's not subtle in its stance it's taking about how these ne'er-do-wells are showing up and buying up upper crust real estate and then getting slightly lower than upper crust people moving in,
right?
And it's just wrecking all the stuff,
like reverse gentrification.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that came with the thing. So did you play on your Apple II?
How'd you play? I did indeed. Yeah. I played using Pitch Black.
Oh, sure.
Pitch. I played using the pitch thing I like so much.
Excellent.
I played using Perfect Pitch.
I played on my Mac using Zoom as I tend to do.
And I didn't have an original box for this. So I just had PDFs of the features.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So it's a murder mystery, and you're this journalist, and you go to this party, and this is not spoilers because it's pretty obvious that within the first few moves, the hostess of the party is dead.
Yes.
And then you are accused of murder, and although the detective shows up to investigate the murder, he's real useless, and basically you have to hand him every piece of evidence in order to be cleared.
Well, because for reasons you'll find out during the game, you become the prime suspect.
Yeah.
A murder happens, and for stuff that we can't really talk about till after the spoiler fence, there's reasons why you would be the most likely suspect for somebody if they didn't have more clues. Like, the initial clues obviously point to you. That's why the game's called Suspect, because in this case, instead of just playing the detective, you're playing the prime suspect. And so you have to kind of, like the back of the box said, you got to point the finger at somebody else. Right. Otherwise, by default, you're the one who's going to get arrested. And that gives you the ticking clock of the this game. The murder happens at, say, 9:30. By 10:30, the detective's there, and by midnight, they're going to arrest you if you can't give them a good reason to arrest somebody else. And right. So that's the framework of the right. game.
Yeah. And it's one of those games, much like the other mystery games, where you're going to learn by screwing up and dying. Actually, there's no deaths in this game, but by getting arrested 100 times. And by the time you solve the game, it involves such a convoluted, I mean, just if this guy solved the game in real life on the first try, it would have meant such a convoluted, like, I had to be here to see this thing, and then I had to be in this and notice this, and I had to, you know, notice this other thing happening at this other moment, and then hustle to this other room for some reason and notice something else. So it's kind of ridiculous. But, you know, whatever.
But it's ridiculous in that finding the proof is hard. Like, figuring out who did it, I thought was really obvious. Like, right away, first playthrough, within five moves, you go, that's the murderer, and this is the thing I need to follow to figure it out. Like, it kind of hands it. If you've read a lot of murder mysteries, it just hands you the killer and the primary clue. And then the difficulty is in following everybody around to get a timeline so you can find the specific bits of evidence you need to give to the detective so that he'll believe you and arrest that other person instead of you. I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I was... I'm not good at mysteries, and it's I don't read a lot of murder mysteries, but I feel like it was a couple of times I thought it was someone else than who it was, or a combination of different you know, I ended up trying every combination, you know, just like detective, comma, arrest this person and that person, and nope, didn't work. Detective, right. You know, just to see what would happen. But
oh, and we should mention, in addition to the detective, there's good old Sergeant Duffy, who was in the last two murder mysteries.
Right. Yeah. Mystery I think it's the same detective. Yeah, it was, I don't know. It's it's characters from the previous.
Well, I think in the other ones, you're playing the detective.
Right.
And so now instead it's just the detective, the same Sergeant Duffy, presumably.
Yeah, presumably.
Oh, actually, no, it can't be, because the previous one took place in the 1920s or whatever.
This is actually mentioned in the InvisiClues. It was just like, how did, you know, Sergeant Duffy and the detective get from whatever state to, you know, the old game is to this? And it gives a bunch of things like, well, they might have changed jobs, or this is actually Sergeant Duffy's brother, Sergeant Duffy.
Sergeant Duffy Jr.
Yeah. So, yep. I don't know.
So in all three games, basically, a murder takes place in the same room. Which I don't know if I can say which room it is. Well, I guess if you play the other games, you know. But it's odd. Like, Infocom has this thing about killing people in a particular room.
Right. Yeah. And there's a butler in this game, so the butler might have done it.
Might have done it. Butlers are always suspicious. Actually, I thought one of the first people I said, well, it's not going to be that person because it's too easy. But it's not going to be the butler. It's going to be somebody else. There's a bunch of people. I wrote them down. So in this game, yeah. And that's something that really separates it from the earlier games. There's a lot of characters in this game, each of whom has a name and like a role and a costume they're in. And it gets a little confusing because sometimes they're referred to as the name and sometimes they're referred to as the costume. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I had to do was make a chart.
To say, exactly.
Okay, this person is this costume, right. And they're interchangeable. And that it makes it more difficult because you've got a lot of people to follow around.
And
their
relationship to each other. I mean, like my chart, like Michael Wellman was costumed as a sheik, and he is the husband of Veronica. You know,
just like. And then Richard Ashcroft is the werewolf, and he's Veronica's brother. Mm-hmm. Then there's, okay, so we got Alan Asher, who's a harlequin and a senator. Alicia Barron is a harem girl. Welcome to the 80s. And that's Veronica's friend. Bill Cochrane is an itchy astronaut. He's an astronaut thing, and he constantly complains how itchy it is. So he's an itchy astronaut. Colonel Marsden plays an explorer, or I wrote down colonizer. Jack Johnson is in a domino mask, and he's just a bartender. Oh, I should say Colonel Marsden was the Ashcroft family accountant, and Bill Cochrane is a real estate developer and is disliked by Veronica's husband. Then we got Linda Mead, a ballerina, who's Richard's girlfriend. Michael, who you mentioned, is Veronica's husband and dressed as a sheik. Richard is the werewolf, who's Veronica's brother. Sam Ostman is a vampire. He's another real estate developer. And then Smythe, the butler, is as a gorilla. And then there's Veronica herself, who's dressed as a fairy, the fairy queen, actually.
Yeah.
And she's the host. So they're all interesting. And in the browsy and feelies, well, the browsy really that comes with the game, there's a lot of talk about real estate development and horses because they own a horse barn and there's two real estate developers here and everybody's up in arms about how much developing is going on, and that kind of is part of the background to the game.
Right. Because what's more exciting than a game about...
My girlfriend's very excited about horses, so I noticed
real
all the
real estate. Oh, yeah, horses can be exciting, but, like, really? Controversies in the real estate area, you know, oh, boy.
That's, yeah, less so. But it's funny, in the browsy, in the magazine page you have, it talks about a saddle that's good for eventing. And a few years ago, I wouldn't have known that what that was. That I now know eventing is a horse competition in which you do show jumping, dressage, and cross-country riding, like the same horse, and you do three events. That's why it's called eventing. This is a thing I did not know before I started dating Rachel. So all weird horse terms. So there's that.
Nice.
Yes, I don't know. Stuff I've learned. So anyway, a whole bunch of people in the... When it describes the party, weirdly though, scrolling my notes here, it actually describes that there's scores of people at this party. So that's at least two, at least 24, but you wouldn't say scores for 24. So I'm thinking 36 or more people are in costume at this party, but you really only interact with 10 of them.
And it sort of like mentions the other ones like in passing, like, oh, there's a someone dressed as a robot or, you know.
As a group. There's somebody as a group. And,
yeah. So, but they're not characters in the game really that you can interact with.
Oh, I never tried that. Do you tell the detective, arrest the GRU? Arrest, like, just pick a totally different person?
I didn't try that.
No, me neither. Arrest Sergeant Duffy.
So this game is unfolding, and the people, much like the other detective-y mystery games we've looked at, things move around in clockwork. People want to be in a certain place at a certain time, and basically these NPCs are little robots that are going to go around and around, and sometimes they're just moving around because there are people at a party moving around, and sometimes they have agendas. They're going to have secret meetings, or, you know, they have to go do loud arguments, or there's a sneaky chore they need to do.
So just like, you're right, just like the first two games, the way you approach this game is different than regular Infocom games. With the mysteries, what you're supposed to do is basically make a chart of everybody's whereabouts. And you play through the game a bunch of times and say, I'm now going to follow Alicia. Now I'm going to follow Michael. And so I end up with a chart that's saying, like, this person and where are they through the game? So you get a sense of those clockwork movements, which I can see is something that a lot of people would not enjoy doing.
No, that's not fun. That makes the game not fun. And one of the notes I wrote down while... playing this game was, this is not fun. And this is one of the reasons. Another reason is, I mean, these people are coming and going. There are so many comings and goings in the game, and they're all, it tells you all of them. It's just like, you know, Veronica is to the south and goes east. And then, you know, so-and-so is to the north and comes into, enters the room. And Richard, you know, is standing here and Linda has left the room. And it's just like literally hundreds, many hundreds of these during the course of the game, of people coming and going. And it's just like, I don't care.
It makes it awkward to read. It's like when you read something and there's too many he said in a row. It's the same sort of thing. Like, you'll have a small description, then there'll be three or four lines that says, this person's here, this person's here, this person's to the left and then moving north. And it becomes awkward to read, and it's kind of too bad. And I get that part of this plot requires a bunch of motion, but it's really too bad there weren't some characters who just at a certain time in the party said, oh, that's terrible, I'm going to go sit in the library. And then they just stayed in the library.
And eventually,
where's Michael? In the library.
Eventually, late in the game, they all sort of settle around the bar.
Yes. But it's pretty late. And there are a lot of, when you're playing the game, though, there's a lot of this person arrives, that person. And sometimes I'm like chasing a person. I move to them, now they've moved north. I move north, now they move east. I'm like, stay still. I want to shout their name.
Driving me crazy. With the detective.
I'm trying to give the detective stuff, and the detective's just walking away from me. I'm like, I have clues for you, dude. Where are you going?
The detective thing was, because he's the person, I mean, early on, you need to find him. You need to show him a few clues so that you don't get arrested. And he's just wandering off. Just like, oh, here, look at this piece of evidence. And like, oh, this is super interesting or whatever. And then he leaves. And just like, wait, come back. You know, or you just have to find him. And just like looking, spent the amount of time I just spent wandering around looking for him, I found very frustrating.
Well, if that's a thing that I found difficult, and I think it's supposed to be obvious, but I didn't realize, like, you've got this overall time limit in the game. Let's say it's midnight, you're going to get arrested, so you've got 3.5 hours or whatever. But there's a certain point kind of halfway through the game at which you will be arrested if you don't distract the detective by giving them some other stuff. And I thought that meant I had to actually solve it by that point. Mm. So I got distracted thinking, oh, I've actually got to solve this thing in like less than 40 moves or something. And I got it in my head, you got to do it way quicker than you do. It's more that you just have to give some things to the detective, it seems, to get his mind on other things, other possibilities. Otherwise, right. if it doesn't have anything else to do, it'll simply arrest you.
Right.
So it took me a while to realize that you have more time than you think, but you do have to get the detective thinking along other lines. Right. At least that's how it seems to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. Anyway, I spent so much time tracking him down, and I found that annoying. The weirdest thing is that, like I said, poor Veronica, is that her name, dies mm-hmm. within yep. the first few moves of the game. The party keeps going on, Carrington.
It is very strange.
I mean, the band's playing music, and people are drinking and talking, and the ambulance comes, and everyone sees it, and they take the body out on a stretcher, and everyone knows, and yet the party goes on for hours, even though the host is dead.
There was a weird moment where I thought I was reacting wrong to something, because there's a moment where the body is discovered, and it's like Michael and Cochran, and I think there's three people there. So I follow these three people, and they discover the body, but they're looking from one room into another room, and they discover the body, and they say, oh, there's a dead body. And then it just says they walk north. And I'm like, they're just walking away. But I didn't realize walking north puts you in the room with the body. And I had my map wrong. So I thought, you're just going to walk away. What's going on, dude? But then it turns out, really, that is kind of how people react. Like, just like you say, there's a dead body, and the party continues. And it's not that the police say, okay, nobody can leave, and everyone's frustrated, and they gather the suspects. It's like the party continues to go on. There's at one point a literal fist fight as well in the main room with the fireplace. And there's scores of people, and nobody reacts to it. And like, there's just a literal fist fight. Right. And everyone's like, well, it's a party. It's how things happen. Like, I thought it was kind of weird.
Yeah, and this is core to the game. I mean, this is how they built the game. That, you know, anyway.
Stiff upper lip, man.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Game wasn't super funny.
No.
There was bits of humor, like little wordplay stuff. There's a moment where you got to snatch something out of a fireplace, and if you do, then the song, like the music changes to play "Light My Fire," and like that kind of level of humor.
I didn't
but there wasn't
that.
A lot
that's,
of.
That's not funny. And also,
but there's that kind of stuff, but there isn't, it's not a laugh out loud thing. I don't really expect a mystery to be that way. But I do kind of enjoy it when Infocom games have a lot of humor in them. Like, they're known for having great humor, and this one doesn't have that. It's got a lot of clockwork motion. So maybe there just wasn't time to put it in. But that said, I still liked the writing. Like, my problem with the writing wasn't the phrasing or the word choice. My problem was so often it had to do that clockwork stuff. Like you said, like, yeah, this person leaves, this person shows up. There's so much mechanical stuff. It distracts a little from the actual writing of the game.
Right. And speaking of the writing, I mean, one of my notes is I didn't like there was poor vocabulary in this game. I had trouble getting it to do what I wanted to do sometimes, which I can throw the stats at you for that.
Hit me, stat me up.
Yeah, the vocabulary of this game is 674 words, which is real light compared to the average of 976.
Especially for such a late game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I had trouble, and I don't know if I can say it much without spoiling, but there were things, some of them were intentional, where they made things tricky.
I want to talk about this with my friends. There's one thing that you have to do that you don't do in the way using the verb I think you should use.
No,
and
it's
I
real.
Think that must have been intentional.
Yeah, that had to be intentional. But aside from that thing that I know what you're talking about, I felt like there were other times where I was trying to get things done and I was just hitting against it not understanding a sensible thing. And yeah, all right, and the other stats are there's 57 rooms in the game, which is pretty light compared to 81 average for an Infocom game.
It doesn't feel like a big map, but no. I didn't expect it to, because it's a house mystery, and you do go outside the house as well. There's a house in the grounds, but like, how many rooms are you going to have in this?
Right.
So I didn't feel that it was claustrophobic for the sort of game it was.
Yeah, yeah. It felt about right. And there's a lot of wasted rooms, it's a big house, it's a mansion or whatever, but
there are two coat closets, which is an odd design for a house.
Yeah. There's a lot of rooms where nothing happens or whatever. And there's 43 objects, a little slightly more than the average of 36 for an Infocom game. And zero ways to die, but several ways to be arrested.
Yeah, it's funny when you if you type score, it doesn't give you a score. It says it's not about a score. It's about just find. It's about playing the game, yeah, or finding the ending or whatever. So I thought that was neat.
Yeah. Yep.
What is it? There are. Oh no, score! I'm looking for my score. Score. It is not so much a question of your score, but whether or not you get to the, whether or not you get the story. Yeah. So that's what it says. So so that's a neat twist, because it really is. At the end of the day, there's different endings. I got one really good ending, which is when you solve it all, and then other ways to get a worse ending, where you solve it kind of, or you just try to pin it on the wrong person or whatever. But
right,
it's really just that. It's really you're playing this one pass fail.
Right. Okay. Did you get the? I didn't get the ending, but there's an ending where somebody dies. Did you see that one?
No. I mean, you mean not Veronica?
Not Veronica.
Like a different person?
Sorry.
Yep. Oh, no, I did not. Mm-hmm. No, I could imagine. I kept thinking I could antagonize the killer. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe I'd be able to like force somebody's hand, yeah, once I have all the clues, but I never bothered doing that.
Hmm. Okay, well, I don't want to spoil. So, yep, there's another ending that neither of us saw then. But it's not like the best ending. It's just...
I got the ending, yeah, once I said, okay, this is the thing, and it tells me, and the ending seemed to be, okay, I have won the game, essentially. It's not subtle about whether you got it right or not.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Mm.
So not your favorite game, but you don't like the mysteries in general. So how would you compare this against the other mystery games? If you had to advise somebody to play this or The Witness or Deadline, which one do you think is the best of the three, given what they are?
I can't. It's a Hobson's choice.
I hear you.
I don't like
poor Hobson. Killed him off at the beginning. I think I like this one the same as Deadline. I think I like The Witness the best of the three.
Which one was The Witness?
That's the one where you are the witness.
Oh, right. Yes,
That was the second one. That's like the gumshoe one. When we only did it like
a
few episodes ago, but it was a long time ago.
Right.
But it was the second one that's more like talking slang gangstery, and I kind of like the atmosphere of it.
Okay,
better.
That one was the best of the three, but not by a lot. This one is no. This one lost my respect when it was basically cheating. When there was a couple of things, one intentional and one not, I believe, that made it just, I didn't trust it. I didn't trust the narrator.
I think I didn't come up with that impression. Like, there's one thing where I thought, well, that's wrong, but I kept thinking it was a mistake, and it was only subsequently I thought, they've intentionally not let me find the thing.
Yeah. You know, remember the thing in one of the other games where you had to search something twice in order to find
it's
the
that
thing.
Sort of feeling, exactly. Yeah. That was in Moon Mist, actually, where I shouldn't say it, but yeah, you have to search in a place and then just search again. Nothing changes. You can do them immediately. Search in the box, though it's not the box. I don't want to do a spoiler. And you find a thing only on the second search. And that seems unfair. A similar sort of thing happens here, but it's not search again. It's do a thing with a verb that's different than you'd think you have to use. At least that's, if you're thinking of the same thing I'm thinking of. And that one I thought was a mistake, and it's only subsequently I thought they did that on purpose to make it harder, and that seems unfair.
Right. So, I don't know. Let's see what other notes I have. I just feel like this was a mystery game. I didn't expect to like it going in. I didn't like it. I really
those,
feel I
those are related?
Felt like it. I tried to give it a chance, but I just didn't care. I mean, I eventually started cheating and getting hints just because I was not having fun following people around. Mm-hmm. Tracking them
down. Which is the primary thing you do in all three of the mystery games is follow people and make a grid of where they're at 9:15 they're here, at 9:20 they're here, and that's what you do with all three mystery games.
Yeah, and that's,
which seems it seems like they could have come up with a different way to do it. Like, this kind of is the third same game in a sense. Like, they didn't. I don't know what you would do to make it very different, but it really is just let's do The Witness again, except this time you're a suspect.
Right.
I don't know what else you would change, but the follow people around and make the clockwork grid, I don't mind doing it, but it's like there's one big overarching puzzle that's not necessarily a great puzzle, which is just fill in this grid. It's like a big Sudoku.
Right. So I feel like my complaining has drowned out your opinion of this, which is probably better
Best
informed.
Game we've played. No,
was this good? Was this okay? Did you have fun?
Yep. I dug it. I dug it. There's games we've played that I definitely like less, but I like a mystery. I like the fact that at the beginning, I mean, I agree that the game kind of plays unfair later, but at the beginning, I like the fact that if you know mysteries and you know the genre, like in the first scene, like I, in my notes, when I scroll down, I have a, like the game starts at like 9:30 PM game time. And I even have a note here that says, boom, solved 10:29 on first playthrough. Now it turns out I wasn't, but I was correct. Like I knew who did it, what the main clue I'd have to follow, like all of that within the first few moves. Like, so in that sense, it plays fair. If you pay attention, it's like, here, gives you everything.
Really?
The problem is then finding enough the details, knowing what you know, to convince a detective to arrest somebody else instead of you. Mm-hmm. And so I liked it, but I really like the genre. It's like some people, if you hate horror movies, it doesn't matter how good a horror movie is, you're going to say, I hate this, it's all gory, I'm not having fun watching this movie. I think it's the same thing here. If you don't like this genre, it's hard for this game to win you over. Yeah. Because I love mysteries. So,
okay. You're entitled.
I like the Sherlock Holmes game. I like this.
Holmes game. God. God, I hated that machine.
But I love Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. So again, I go in predisposed to like it.
Sure.
And I think it makes me overlook its flaws.
Okay.
I get that I'm not unbiased in this case.
Right.
Or any case, to be honest.
Cool.
So you solved it. You had to cheat.
I cheated. I cheated a lot. I made a list, but you know what? It's not interesting. It's long. It's just, let's see. Do I have anything in my... hints cheat list that is interesting
or not non-spoilery?
No, it's all spoilery or just not interesting or just makes me mad to think about, but we'll talk about it after spoiler fans.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting in this game you can use G for again, which is something like back before we started playing these games, I never did that. In fact, I would never type again. I literally would just type the same sentence over and over again. And I've now gotten to the point where I'll actually like, just like a boss, I'll just type G and hit return. Just like I know what I'm doing. It's great. And this game lets you do that, but it doesn't let you use oops, which is a thing I use sometimes where it says, you know, you've spelled a word wrong. So you can say oops and what word it really is supposed to be. It doesn't support that. So.
Cool. Good to know.
That's it. Yeah. Do you find any bugs? You always find bugs. Do you find bugs?
I found... one little...
Were they actually bugs, or do you think it's just plot you didn't
like? Yeah.
It's a bug that I don't like this bit.
I don't think I can talk about it before the spoiler fans. I found one little bug.
It's all good.
Yeah. We can talk about it in a minute.
I've yet to find a bug.
Oh, there was one other... That's not true.
Played through without cheating other games, but not much. I had to cheat in this game, too. I really want to be able to do these. By now, I should be able to do these games without cheating, but... Again, I had to look stuff up, even on this, which I think I pretty much solved it right away. And I liked the genre. Like, I had everything stacked in my favor, and yet I still had to look up some, get some help.
Yeah. Well, I was cheating, I mean, partially, like I said, because I was over it. You know, I was on vacation playing this game, and I'm just like, I'm not having fun. It's not going to get better. I mean, I'm not going to, like, be figure it out myself and feel, like, overwhelmed with a sense of joy that's going
right.
to be better than this just... grumpiness I have at the game, so you know.
You don't be grumpy on vacation.
No, you don't. The other word I learned, I just found this. If you take the dead body and you try to hide it in a seat, you try to hide it in a big removable seat thing. It says your name wouldn't be Brewster by any chance. And I was just like, what? And it turns out that's a reference to Arsenic and Old Lace, which is a play that I saw many years ago, but apparently somebody finds a body hidden in a bench or something there.
It's also a movie, Cary Grant movie, a really good one.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I recommend it. It's okay. Funny.
Great. All right, anything else?
Would you recommend this as somebody's first game?
Sure.
No, you wouldn't, because you'd say if they played this, they wouldn't like it, and then they would never want to play another Infocom game. I would not recommend it as a first game either. I think if you've played the other mystery games and you liked them, then you will like this one.
Sure.
It's the same game again with the same sort of methodology to solve it with maybe a slightly more interesting murder and solution.
If this is the sort of thing you like, then you will like this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, but I do think so. Like, I think, but I think that is still a note in its favor. It's not like I would say, oh, if you really like mysteries, keep away from this one, or this is terrible, play the other two, don't play this. No, I do think if you don't like Deadline and The Witness, you won't like this. It's not going to change your mind. But if you like those first two, you'll like this one.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't, I think it's too difficult to be a first game, though. If you've never played InfoCom, this ain't the one to start with.
Yeah.
And I just, it's not indicative of the other games as well. Like, this is not a game that is just like, oh, that's the iconic InfoCom game that if you play this, you'll generally like InfoCom games. No, you could hate this game and still like InfoCom games. Witness the Kevin. Oh, The Witness.
But besides the whole mystery thing, just putting that aside, I think that I feel, and I might be completely wrong from a technical standpoint, but I feel like these games are built on a different engine. It's like engine where we have clockwork things happening, and you know, people going places at certain predefined times. And I don't like that. I don't like that. I like to, in the dungeon or in the house or whatever, by yourself, maybe with one NPC. You know, and you can do things on your own time. And these things with a ticking clock. It feels like it's written with a different engine. It has a very different tone to it. And mysteries aside, I don't care for that.
I think that is a very valid point, and also is the thing I like least about these games. Something I like about InfoCom games, it's supposed to feel like you've got a puzzle and you're frustrated and you can walk away for 2 weeks and just let it sit in your brain and think about it. Like, it is incredibly not time-based. And these turn it into an overall turn-based, like, RTS. And I'm fine with certain puzzles in a game being time-based. Like, you've got four moves to do this, or you've got to get across the bridge before a certain amount. Like, that I'm okay with, but I always find even those a little bit frustrating. And so the most frustrating thing about these games is the fact that it is completely time-based. Like, you've got so many moves, the clock keeps ticking until midnight. And the reality is, I don't think it needs to be. And I get that for verisimilitude, you know, that's a big word, it wants to say, you know, the body's found at 9:30 and the police show up at 10:30 and they're going to arrest you at midnight. And so that's your ticking clock, because mysteries want to have a ticking clock. But I don't think the game would have suffered if it was simply not keeping track of that. You're on move 293 and this is just the party that never ends, because whatever, you're just doing what you do and eventually you come up with an ending. And I think the game would have been just as fun the game would have been more fun without that. Problem is, the inherent in this particular mystery is all this clockwork stuff and people essentially and trying to give themselves alibis or trying to fool you or get things done in relation to the murder in certain places with certain times. And again, I think that you could make the game have those elements and still not be a ticking clock. Like, a person could have just hid something in a certain place, or when you meet a person at any time, if you're in the library, you can spot, you know, Bobby pulling a certain book off the shelf or whatever. Like, you could do this game without that ticking clock stuff at all. And I think the game would benefit from not having that. So I completely agree. I don't like the RTS movement stuff and a clockwork movement. I map it, I don't like, and make a little chart, I don't have a problem with it, but I don't enjoy it very much.
Okay.
Overall, though, I like the game. I'd still give it a thumbs up. I still like it. There's games we played that I definitely like worse than this.
Glad you enjoyed it. I give it a thumbs down. Yeah. So mixed.
I didn't love it. I absolutely didn't love it. This won't make my top 10, but I'm happy I played it. I wouldn't come back to it, but I'm happy I played it.
Okay. Cool. Before we go over the spoiler fence, shall we pick our next game?
We shall. I think it's your turn. It's always better when it's your turn. I don't impose a disappointment on you. So do you have a list that you can look at for what's left?
I do have a list. Let's talk about this. Excellent. This is so short, we will discuss the list. Here's what's left to play in the non-graphical games. A Mind Forever Voyaging, The Lurking Horror, Beyond Zork, Wishbringer, Planetfall, and Stationfall.
Okay, so Planetfall and Stationfall are a pair. Mm-hmm. So we've already established we don't want to play them out of order.
Sure.
So that gives you five to pick from.
Right.
All of them are mysteries.
This has been the last episode of Eaten by a Group.
We're going to just play them all at once. Yeah. They're all mysteries. So what are what's your process when it comes to picking when we got those last few? Like for me last time, I picked Suspect because of all those, it was really the one I least wanted to play. And so I'm like, let's get it. I'm a play the one I don't like, get it out of the way. Are you more the opposite? Do you want to play the one you're most looking forward to? What goes through your mind now that the pressure of picking the game?
Yeah, my initial thought is I just played one I didn't love. So I don't want to do another one that I don't, not going to love.
I think that way sometimes, like when we do a super hard one, I don't necessarily want to play another super hard one or whatever. So, yep, I get that.
So I think Lurking Horror is out for my choice right now.
Which is so funny because it's the one
I know.
I think would be the best.
Yes, I know. And also I like to make you suffer. So Lurking Horror is out.
No, it's all good.
I feel like maybe Beyond Zork should be the last... perhaps be the last text game that we play.
Because it's kind of like a different sort of thing, isn't it? Isn't it kind of like a...
Don't
you get like stats and stuff?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's like a Zork game where it's also like an RPG.
Oh, okay. I don't know anything about it.
Maybe. Okay, that narrows it down.
Okay. I was going to pick, but now you're making me. Wishbringer, I feel like I'm still... We just did Spellbreaker last episode. I feel like it's still too fresh in my mind.
So I think I know what leaves you.
Okay, that leaves me Planetfall or A Mind Forever Voyaging.
Okay, and what do you feel like playing?
I want to play A Mind Forever Voyaging.
A Mind Forever Voyaging it is, which I think is another one I've super looked forward to. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, it's one of the, like today, one of the most popular ones.
Isn't it? I believe so.
I think it's like a lot of people have it as their favorite or a favorite. Although it's another one I think that had a bit of, I don't know, I haven't played it, but I think it's got a bit of controversy that it's another game that's a little different than a traditional Infocom game.
We'll talk about this next time, but I have played it before and I can tell you it is very different. It is definitely interactive fiction and not a puzzle fest.
Okay, cool.
I wouldn't be surprised if our next episode is in a week or two.
Okay. In fact, we'll just continue going right through. We'll just do it live.
Yeah. Sure. Anyway, so and if you're a person who listens to these episodes and think I could never finish an Infocom game, trust me, you can finish A Mind Forever Voyaging. You can do it. So, yeah,
great. You can do it. You can do it.
Yeah. All right.
Excellent. Well chosen.
Thank you. All right. Next is our spoiler fence. So look, if you think you ever want to play Suspect, then stop listening because we are going to talk about whodunit. We are going to spoil the game as we continue talking a little bit more about it.
It's a mystery, so we're going to be spoiling literally the ending, right. I think.
If you ever want to play it, then stop listening. You can come back later after you've played the game and figure it out on your own. If you're never going to play it or you've already played it, then come along with us over the spoiler fence and as we discuss Suspect a little bit more. All right, so the thing that we've been talking about but not talking about is the friggin' mask.
It's the hair and the mask, right?
The hair and the mask.
Right.
Okay, examine the mask. It says that you don't see anything. And in order to find the important piece of evidence in the mask, which is a piece of hair that's damp with sweat, you have to look inside the mask.
Oh, I did... search mask, okay. I think. Because I think the idea is examine is with your eyes and search is with your hands. And I get that seems fair because you can examine from a distance and search, you're really searching it hands on. But it seems to me like a mask, to even examine the mask, I'm going to pick it up and look at both sides. I'm not going to, but I guess they're thinking examine the mask means you don't walk over to it and pick it up. But that's not how I took it. Like when I said examine mask, I'm thinking like I'm looking at the mask. Like and it's not a subtle thing to see there's a big old black hair in it.
Yeah, no.
So
it was, and that was the equivalent of the two search thing that made me. So that was the thing that made me not trust the game once that started happening. You know, it's like
And it is a thing I had to get help with. That's something because I had looked at the mask and the thing is I knew that we should talk about it, but I knew that Veronica, that it was Alicia wearing the mask. Like by the point when we find the body, I knew from the first damn scene it's Alicia wearing the mask.
Why?
It's obvious.
Why did you know that?
Let me go back to my notes. So I've read a lot of mysteries, first of all, but if I can go to my notes, I can go through the process. So it's in the regular notes, not even my spoiler notes. So you show up at the party and you have arrived at a party invited by Veronica, who writes the note to you saying, "Dearest." So you're supposed to, this is a thing I didn't like. You're supposed to know her really well. So it bugged me. In fact, I wondered if it's trying to make me think it's not Veronica, but I should know it's her because if I know this person, what's going on? But anyway, so you've got the various people, you show up at the, and it says, here's, I wrote down this quote. So this is from like Move 2 or whatever. Samuel Osterman, enjoying himself hugely as a vampire, is here. A sheik, whom you can recognize as Michael Wellman, and a fairy queen, presumably Veronica Ashcroft, under her ornate mask. And I wrote, why presumably? Everyone else you can recognize but not her? That's suspicious. Assumption, it's somebody else pretending to be Veronica in the costume. So first, like, that's because they introduce her in a weird way. Mm. But then when you walk over and join them, it says, Titania, Queen of Fairy, is here. Michael, costume as a sheik, is here. Bingo, you know what, she's in disguise. Because Titania is the fairy queen from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
What's the whole point of that play is people confused as other people. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, that's it. It's changed people. It's mistaken identities. So that's why I say deduction. Veronica is probably already dead. And the killer is this woman who can't be Linda because she's here in the room with me. Deduction two. That in turn means that Michael has to be in on it because there's no way he would know this was in his wife. So solution, Veronica's already killed earlier by a female in cahoots with the victim's wife and probably due to an affair. So I'm like, and then, so I know it can't be Veronica, didn't kill herself. Can't be Alicia, didn't kill herself. And then like three moves later, Alicia shows up soaking wet and says, I go deduction. Alicia's the person who killed her because she's the only other female. So she's the one who's pretending to be Veronica. And the fact that she showed up soaking wet must be the clue I need to follow to prove she's a killer. Bing. It's like three moves in, you know, who did it? Who helped? And what's the main clue you have to follow? And now you have to play the whole game to figure out why is the fact that she's soaking wet a big clue? And why did they kill them? But it's obvious, like, she's dressed up. So when I looked at the mask, I assumed, okay, I looked at the mask, and if it was a thing to tell me, like, her hair's in there, I think I would have spotted it. Like, it really bugged me that you have to say search. You can't just say examine. That, I thought that was crap.
Yeah. First of all, that was brilliant, like, how you just explained
it. No, it was having seen 1,000 mysteries. Sure, like, okay. This is such an old plot. It's like, in fact, I started later saying notes, I think they're making you think it's that, and it'll turn out to be the butler or whatever, and it's got to be a red herring because it's too darn obvious. Because it's such an old hat way to do a mystery. Mm. Like, there's a million of these plots exactly like this.
Mm.
And it's the economy of character. Like, we know it had to be a female, and there's only two females walking around, and it so...
Okay, well, all right. My other issue with this game that I wanted to talk about before but really couldn't was issues with hiding. Hiding was not well handled, and I found it frustrating.
When you have to hide in the library?
In the library and also in the garage. You could hide.
And in the garage as well.
So right. Let's talk about the library. I knew I needed to hide because these two people were going to have a meeting, and I wanted to see what was going on for the meeting. And I tried 5 ways to hide in the room, and I just couldn't make it do it. And eventually I had to cheat and find out you have to hide behind the chair. Okay.
I had the exact same experience. Couldn't figure out how to hide, had to go to the clues that tell me to hide behind the chair. I'm like, but I've been wanting to hide.
Yeah.
I found that frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing was in the garage. Someone's coming into the garage. Now, I don't remember who, Michael? Somebody's coming into the garage. He's going to get something out of the trunk or put something in the trunk or whatever. It's in
the BMW. It's so 80s.
So yeah, his BMW. And so I'm trying to get in there. It's kind of funny. If he goes into the garage and he finds you in there standing around, he yells at you. He's just like, what are you doing in here? Blah. And he leaves and he comes back and he's like, he basically gets into this loop of, you know, he has to
he
do this.
Really wants to be in the garage. Yeah. He just wants you to not
he
be
wants
there.
You not be there. So I tried so many ways to hide in the garage. I mean, I tried hiding under the car. I didn't understand that. I tried bringing in a hamper and hiding in the hamper. I tried hiding.
Oh, I didn't try that.
It doesn't let you get in the hamper. I tried hiding under the workbench. It's so stupid. You need to hide. Here's the answer. Hide behind the car. He's getting something out of the trunk.
Yes.
Hiding behind the car is wrong. That doesn't make any sense.
In both cases, you have to hide. Like, the way the plot, like, I don't think there's a way to solve it without doing it. You have to be in these rooms and you have to hide to see that. I thought it was poorly handled that there should have been a more obvious thing put there. Then there should have, in each case, like in the library, there should have been like a screen or something. And you say, I'd be like something that's there for hiding, which wouldn't give away the fact that you have to hide behind it, but would give you a natural thing to hide behind.
Yeah.
And the garage, definitely. Like, there, I don't see, I kept thinking, I was thinking I had to be outside the garage and there'd be a way to be like looking through the garage door or something. And it'd be like a window. So you could be not in the room, but see the actions of the room. And it turns out, no, you hide behind the car. took me eight. I ended up having to, just like you, I looked up the solution and I was bothered by it.
Yeah, and hiding under the car should be fine. That's a perfectly good solution if you're willing to get dirty. It's, you know.
But can you fit under there? I think by this point you have picked up the waste paper basket. And you basically spend the second half of the game walking around holding a wastebasket, which is the weirdest thing. Like, nobody questions, like, why are you just walking? Because there's a glass that's been shattered at the beginning. You want to get fingerprints off it. And if you pick up the glass or interact with it, it gets messed up. So I found, like, you have to pick up the wastebasket. And I couldn't figure out a way to say, no, I want to just, like, grab it with something else. I don't know what the solution was, but my solution was pick up the wastebasket and just carry it around the whole time and just hand it to the detective at the end and say, here's the trash can I've been carrying for the last 50 minutes.
I think I just got the basket and then hunted down the detective and gave it to him right there.
Oh, I got it early because I was worried somebody would take it or go missing. So one of the things on my list of, once I started figuring out my clockwork, was, okay, on this move, go pick up the wastebasket and I'll just have it in my inventory from now on.
The bug I found, a sort of bug.
Oh, yes.
I had found a Manila folder that's in the office with the dead body. I had found it, was carrying it around or whatever. And I said, ask Michael about folder. And the game said, which folder do you mean? The Manila folder or the trust folder?
And you're like, what trust folder?
I don't know anything about a trust folder. So I don't know if that's a bug or not, but it was certainly... tipping its hand, you know, before I got...
Oh, yeah, that's bad. And again, there's no reason why they couldn't have been... Like, why make them both be folders then?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the trust folder pissed me off later. I'm just going through my list of grievances. At the end of the game, show trust folder to detective. And this deus ex machina moment happens where... Now, first of all, you try to read the folder yourself, and it's just like, it's a big, thick folder full of documents. It doesn't tell you anything. And then it's just like, the detective looks at the trust folder for a moment, then takes it. Where did you get this? It's important. This means that Michael and Colonel Marston were embezzling from the family trust. And further, Veronica knew it. That's a lot of information.
Yeah, the embezzlement comes out of nowhere. The embezzlement, I was, even in my notes, I'm like, where did this, was I supposed to find other clues for the embezzlement? I hadn't, you can solve it not knowing that that's the case. I had no idea. And it just kind of tells you, by the way, there was embezzlement. I'm like, was there? Okay.
Right. Anyway, it just, you have this big folder and you can't look at it. And then all of a sudden, the detective in it, like a split second, gets all this information out of it. And it was just, it was dumb. It was dumb, dumb, dumb.
That's funny. I didn't think of that one, although it did bug me at the time. What bugged me is one of the main things is the fact that Alicia shows up soaking wet. And so you know from the beginning, okay, she was disguised, but she shows up soaking wet. Why does it tell you she shows up soaking wet? It's got to be a big deal because it kind of mentions when you show up it's raining. So, and the whole point is it proves that she was there longer than you thought because at the time she shows up, supposedly it's not raining anymore, but it is raining. And that bugs me. Like, why when you go outside and you look at the weather, doesn't it say the sky is totally clear and it's not raining? Instead, it says the rain has reduced to a drizzle. I don't know why the drizzle threw me off thinking, oh, okay, I guess the wetness isn't really a big clue because it's still drizzling. And it turns out, no, you're supposed to think, well, it's drizzling and that's not enough for her to be soaking wet. And I thought it was kind of cheap. It should have been that the skies have been clear and they've been clear for the last 20 minutes. And you're like, ah, then why is she wet? She must have been here earlier. Because that's literally what you're supposed to deduce. So it bugged me that the drizzle bugs me, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I get that.
Also, there's two coat closets. And I got messed up because I went to the one coat closet, I guess the east one or whatever, mm-hmm. as full of things. But the first time I went to the west coast closet and you open up and there's nothing in there. And I thought, oh, I guess I'm completely wrong about this. I thought I'd find clues and everything. And then my map threw me off a few times. Mm-hmm. My lack of mapping skills threw me off.
The house was a little complicated with just... Sometimes it was you could have to enter a room through the east, and we had to leave through the southwest.
And there's a bunch of weird hallways where you're in the hallway, and the hallway would be like three rooms long, and it's like on the bottom part of one thing is where you enter a door. And so the descriptions threw me off quite a bit, where I would map it one way and then realize, hold on, that's actually got to be below that. And so for some reason, I had a lot of trouble mapping this thing.
Yeah. And the weather, something else about the weather. Oh, at the end, I mean, the detective wanted, he wants evidence, and of course, that makes sense. But then... Basically, the solution to telling him that Alicia got there at a different time than she said is detective, comma, or tell detective about weather. And basically, you tell him, oh, it wasn't raining the whole time or whatever. And he takes that as like evidence, and that's enough to get her arrested. Just,
well, I showed her coat and then said that.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Like I say, like, here's her coat soaking wet. Although he doesn't know I didn't to get on the crime. I'm like, maybe I just soaked it in the bathtub or right. whatever. Here's her coat soaking wet, and then say about the weather. And he puts like two and two together.
Yeah. It just seemed real, real weak to me. Weak sauce.
It's weak sauce. I hear you. I hear you. There was a funny thing, well, funny-ish, in the library. There's a book, which is this book. So you find the book in the library, and it's got suspect on the cover, and you start to read it, but then you stop because when you realize somebody's ripped out the last 10 pages. So that'd be funny if you could look at the end of the book, and they would give you a clue, but it doesn't. They thought about that. Yep. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
That's about all I have.
Looking through my notes to see if there's other stuff. There's a rug, and so did you lift the rug?
Yes.
Yes. And so, and it says under the rug, you see a wooden trap door. Wait, no, sorry. That's another story. Yeah. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that was good. Like, well,
yep. So I dug that. So there's stuff like that in it that I quite liked. I didn't like the fact that like some of the plot doesn't hold together. The embezzlement, like you said, comes out of nowhere. There's, I think, no clues in here about that at all. I don't know why we're supposed to get that. But another thing kind of falls apart on the overall scheme of things. So the basic plot is, Michael, who's Veronica's husband, wants to bump off his wife so he can sell the farm to the one real estate agent who's doing that, like buying up farms and then selling to other people, like the magazine talked about. I don't know how he convinces Alicia to be part of this. Presumably they're having an affair, because I'm like, why is she even saying, yeah, let's bump off my friend? Okay, I don't know why that's the case. So the idea is they're going to kill Veronica earlier. And then Alicia will dress up like Veronica, because everyone's in costume anyway. And that will give Michael an alibi, because Veronica is supposedly at the party at, say, 10 o'clock when Michael's seen. And then Michael is in the presence of a ton of other people by the time they walk together over and discover the body. So Michael has an alibi, because you see Veronica at the party, and then Veronica goes off and get killed, and Michael is never alone. Great. But Alicia doesn't have an alibi, because... So she shows up late. That doesn't prove anything. Maybe she showed up and killed her. Maybe she went through a different room and killed her. Like, where? What's her alibi for 9:30? She doesn't have one. She goes, oh, trust me, I was just driving here. Like, so I get that she put all this effort in to give Michael an alibi, but I don't know why she's helping and she doesn't have an alibi. And you know, and it turns out just saying, well, no, you're wet. Oh no, that proves I was here. Like, they really didn't think this thing through. But I don't understand, like, why she didn't kill a person and then hide in there and then come around at the time she actually arrives, because it's not raining anymore. Like, why did she get soaking wet? Why did she kill the person and then go hang out in the pouring rain outside for like an hour and a half, just standing in the woods getting soaked? It's a weird way to help somebody and not establish her own alibi. So I think some of the, like, the actual mystery plot doesn't hold together. So I didn't like that part.
Yeah, I don't know why she did that. I want to talk about the alternate ending that neither one of us saw, but you said
somebody else can be killed?
Yeah. So apparently, yes. if you confront Michael and Alicia with the evidence that you found, instead of taking it to the detective, they get spooked and they try to leave. And they have a car hidden behind the barn. So they try to sneak through the barn to get to their car and get out of Dodge, right?
Right.
And according, I'm reading from the InvisiClues here. The plucky reporter went on to prove it was Veronica's own husband and her self-described best friend who were guilty. When the pair were confronted with the damning evidence, they fled to the barn in an effort to escape. Ironically, Michael was trampled and killed by Veronica's prize horse, Lurking Gru, as he and Baron entered the barn without any light.
That's awesome.
They were killed by a Gru in the dark.
Yep. That's nice. That's fantastic. That's really good. They mentioned Lurking Gru, the name of the horse, in the Browsy.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. But being killed by Lurking Gru in the dark is good. That's very good. I did not get that ending. I just figured, well, I'm supposed to show the detective. I got in the mindset, get these clues, show them to the detective.
Right.
But I got bad endings. I got endings where I was convicted of second degree murder. I don't know if you got that one. Like, I'm like, what the heck, man? It's like, so you can do badly enough of this to actually the frame works and you get convicted of murder.
Oh, yeah. I had that so, early on.
Yeah. But times. Then they continue. I think it says like you get convicted, but then Sergeant Duffy and the detective are nagged by doubt. So they look into it and then you are eventually released. But, you know,
But you don't get the story.
You don't get the story. You don't get your Pulitzer gets away from you or whatever. So.
Right.
Yeah. It seems also very unlikely that if you have for a long time known Veronica and are close enough friends to them that she writes you a note saying, dearest, blah, 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 mm-hmm. that you wouldn't recognize it's not her in the mask. You show up and, well, it says it muffles her voice a bit. If I showed up at Kansas Fest and it's actually like Ken with a mask on pretending to be you, I know it's not Ken. Like, you get to know the physicality and the body shapes and stuff of your friends. Like this,
right.
It seems remarkably unlikely that nobody at this party of scores of her friends, nobody realizes it's not Veronica in that costume. Like, that's just not going to hold together.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, these are people who will happily go on and have a party well after their friend is dead.
They will indeed. There goes the neighborhood. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
So, not a great game, but I still liked it. I still had fun.
Good.
It's not a long game. It's easier than some we played, so
yeah.
I'll take it.
Good.
But I cheated anyway. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
I'm a big old cheater.
Big old cheater.
So, overall, you didn't dig it?
No, not
at all. I kind of liked it.
Nope.
I think that's the conclusion. We've solved the mystery.
Yeah. Yes, we have. Once again.
Yep. Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Well, next time we'll have a mind that... Forever Voyaging, which Kevin has promised everybody can solve. Challenge accepted. In the meantime, this has been Eaten by Grew, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us email to grew@monsterfeet.com or hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. And if you like, you can give us a review on iTunes, which we suspect would help other people find the show. And the show notes and stuff can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to the criminally fantastic MC Frontlot for letting us use his song as our very suspicious theme tune. We appreciate it. And thank you for podcasting with me, Kevin.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington Event.
Don't look directly at me. And I will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Is it because you're used to the Joko cruise, so you're used to a younger, nerdier crowd?
Oh, no, it's totally ruined me for other cruises.
I'm sorry that your cruises were ruined by Jonathan Colton.
That's right.
Way to go, Jonathan Colton.